This program is sponsored by Dave Stahl.
Park your truck, get off your motorcycle, and leave your bull at the door. Come on in to the No Bull Roadhouse. Here are your hosts, Dave Stahl and Steve Cohen.
All right, folks, welcome to No Bull Roadhouse right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. Steve Cohen's in the house. And boy, I tell you what, you better hang on tight. We have got a show. And Steve just told me something that I would give my left arm to do, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. You know, this has just been such a great few weeks here, and I thought I'd put together a show today where we invited people to the Roadhouse that are very diverse. We've got the chairman, former chairman of the Republican Party, Tom Del Baccaro, is coming up.
Yeah.
I got Martha Martin, a great artist locally.
Uh-huh.
She's going to tell us about a new program to get kids into art. And then we've got Archie Moore's son, Billy Moore, who's going to talk about how he's using boxing to help kids find their way.
And you know how many years he's been doing that?
Oh, yeah. He's going to talk about it. And remember, Archie Moore, who isn't heralded sometimes as much as Muhammad Ali
right.
and Rocky Marciano, one of the great heavyweight boxers in the great era of heavyweight boxers.
Yeah.
So you're going to bring Archie in, and then I'm going to talk about it at the end of the show, so please stay tuned for this. I had an opportunity on March 5th on Super Tuesday. I was lucky enough to be invited to Mar-a-Lago, which I had never been to, in West Palm Beach. And I went in there with 500 people, sat at a table with the host that brought me there. And lo and behold, the host brought former President Trump over to me, and we had a chance to chat for a few minutes, and I'm going to tell you all about that. That's going to be wonderful. But I want to say one thing to all of you churchgoers and all the other folks out. This is a special day.
Yes,
March
24th.
Here's why. One, it's Palm Sunday. We know what that's about. That's when Jesus Christ came back to Jerusalem, and people put palm fronds down so he could walk over the cobblestones. Yeah. And that was a jubilant day, the beginning of Holy Week. For the Jewish people that are out there in the world, the 15 million Jews, this is Purim, which is the day that symbolizes a woman by the name of Queen Esther of Persia who saved the lives of all the Jews on the planet. That's Purim. That's today.
Wow.
And third, we don't want to forget, of course, the Muslim holiday as everyone is going through Ramadan in the midst of that. So our three Abrahamic faiths on the same day, March 24th, are all celebrating those three things. I just didn't want to forget that spiritually because I think it's so important.
I do too. And nobody else seems to be talking about it.
Well, you know, we could talk for a long time about all three of those things,
yeah.
But I do think you have to honor Palm Sunday and Purim, which don't come on the same day.
Right.
So let's get started.
Yeah, let's get Tom. Tom's on the line. Let's go ahead and bring him on. Hey, Tom, how's it going, buddy?
It's going great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Tom, we're just so happy to have you. I know that you and I had an opportunity to meet in New York a few weeks ago. And, Tom, I wanted to start out by asking you, as a former head of the Republican Party and I think one of the brightest philosophers and historians of what's happened politically globally but also in the U.S., what about this idea of this thing called lawfare? Could you define lawfare, and is it real in regard to former President Trump?
Well, that's a broad question, but let's start with this. When the stakes are high, politicians tend to pull out all the stops. Congress, in the old days, we did it in Congress. You know, I think in the 1780s, Congress started before the
right.
Before the 1800s, they had started this process of investigations, and for most of a century and a half, that satisfied them. But the left has grown more intense with respect to its socialist views, let's call it that, because they are driven these days by a party agenda that is very much similar to what the Socialist Party wanted in America in the early 1900s. And for them, for those leaders, not all Democrats, victory is everything. And back in 2015, and I discussed this in my last book, The Divided Era, remember that Rick Perry was indicted when he was attempting to run for president, and it sidelined them. The same happened to Bob McDonald of Virginia. they sidelined him with this Jack Smith serious investigation, which eventually they found him to be completely innocent. But the reality was, sorry about that background noise, but they eventually found these people innocent.
All right, but Tom,
what
Jack's,
the Democrats discovered was that these were effective ways to knock people out of campaigns.
Right.
So that's what they're doing today with Trump. And if they succeed by stopping him from winning this fall, they will have felt vindicated.
All right, so let me go over what former President Trump is up against. So we've had Jack Smith is back, and that's the January 6th trial. We have him up for RICO violations in Georgia with the Fannie Willis prosecution. He's up for a Stormy Daniels case that we'll hear about tomorrow, whether that gets delayed or not, right? And we also have him on documents in Mar-a-Lago. So you put all of that together, and it seems that the Democrats have figured out a way to use the American legal system as an attack mechanism on the president, particularly, of course, I don't want to leave out New York, the $454 million judgment against him for what is, you know, most folks think totally invalid result based by Judge Aragon. What's your view of any of those trials, and specifically your premise, which is that this started many years ago as being a weaponized judiciary?
Well, these trials, all of them, the laws that they say apply to President Trump's actions are all being stretched far beyond what those laws have ever been used for before. So these prosecutors, some of whom visited the White House before these charges were brought, have stretched the law and brought these indictments. And I expect Trump, you don't have to believe me, believe Alan Dershowitz, I think it's very risky for Trump on a number of these things because they're occurring in jury pool cities that are most unfriendly, and that would be D.C., Atlanta, and New York. So there is a risk, regardless of the truth and the facts, that Trump could be held liable, just as you saw with the rape charge allegation. He wasn't found guilty of rape, but ludicrously, this woman named the wrong year and the wrong outfits, and she was completely wrong on the facts, but they still found him guilty, and that is because of the jury pool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a high risk to President Trump in the short run of losing some of these. I think in the long run, they will be overturned on appeal. But the Democrats who are engaging in this don't care about the long run, just as they didn't with Bob McDonald when Jack Smith was overturned 9-0 by the Supreme Court. They're just focusing between now and November and depleting Trump of his money and or sullying him to the point where he can't win a particular election. Now, look, in the short run, he has risen in the polls because even a majority of American registered voters today say that Biden's doing this to jail his opponent. However, there is polling that shows, especially among women, that if he's found guilty in any regard, that his support among them will drop significantly. And that's what the Democrats are hoping for.
So you don't think this is going to backfire on the Democrats, or do you think that it could, in fact, backfire and give Donald Trump the voters that are not going to vote? They just don't want to vote for Biden if they can find an alternative.
I do think it has backfired on the Democrats to date. What we don't know for certain is what if one of these trials actually goes to trial and Trump is found, quote unquote, guilty. That is a wild card we don't know yet. But so far, it has backfired. And if they seize any assets in New York, it will backfire even more on the Democrats. And make no mistake about it. This election on the ballot, including the border, is whether the DOJ and the FBI can get away with this by going after Republicans when they run for office.
Wow.
Because if Trump doesn't win, they will do this again and again.
Without a doubt. Are we going to hang on with Tom, or are we going to let him go?
Let's have Tom come back for a few minutes.
Come on back for a few moments, Tom, because I would like to ask a question about when you're picking a jury, even though it's in a hostile environment, you know, can you survive that? We'll talk about that when we come back right here on No Bull Roadhouse, FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer.
Aw, man, the lights are flickering again. Looks like we got to pay us some bills. We'll be right back to the No Bull Roadhouse right after this. All right, folks, y'all can come back into the No Bull Roadhouse. Here are your hosts, Dave Stahl and Steve Cohen.
All right, folks, welcome back to No Bull Roadhouse. FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. Steve Cohen's in the house, and we're talking with Tom Del Beccaro. And Steve, why don't we continue on with his conversation?
Yeah, Tom, so where we left off there was I was asking whether or not you thought this weaponization of the law would have a negative result on the Democrats. Could you, why don't you just give us your feeling on that again, and then Dave has a question for you.
Yeah.
Well, I think the negative result the Democrats have felt to date is that it has solidified Republicans behind Trump, who otherwise wouldn't be for him, because they see this for what it is, which is election interference. It has also scared away independents from Democrats because they're of the view that Biden is using the DOJ for his own political purposes. If the election were tomorrow, prior to any actual trial and finding of guilt about Trump on any of these criminal charges versus the civil, then I'm not sure what the final result will be. But certainly as we sit here today, this has been backfiring on the Democrats. And if this woman who's completely corrupt in New York attempts to seize his assets, that will only drive his ratings higher.
I think Dave and I both agree with you on that. I think it's a really good analysis. Dave, you want to ask Tom a question?
Yeah, before we let you go, Tom. You know, because when you pick the jury, you know, both sides either say yay or nay. But do you think that the jury pool is so tainted that there's no way he could get a decent jury?
Oh, I don't think it's possible for him to get a fair jury trial in D.C.,
right.
I don't think it's next to impossible for him to get a fair trial in New York and Atlanta. And look, jurors withhold things from you. The biggest jury verdict I ever got, I was convinced that the juror who was sitting close to me in the box didn't like me at all. I just didn't have any good feelings about her. And then when they came out to read the verdict, she leaned over and looked, and I said, "Can I help you?" And she goes, "Oh, I just wanted to see what tie you were wearing today. I love them all." So I was completely wrong about her.
Wow.
It's a very difficult process. But look, Washington, D.C. is what the 90% Democrat. That's why they want to do this.
Wow. All right, buddy.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, you know, hopefully we'll get you back on down the road.
100%. And I have my new book, The Lessons of the American Civilization, coming out this summer.
Oh.
We should hopefully get to talk about that, too.
Well, what we'll do is send Steve and I a copy. We'll read it, and then we'll get you back on, and we'll do a real good review on it.
We'll do a whole show.
I learned a long time ago, if you don't read the book and then you try to do a review of it, it doesn't go real well.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Have a wonderful day. All right. Hey, let's. We've got Martha Martin on the line. Now, we had her on first show, right?
Martha, are you there?
Where's Martha? Hit the button, son. That's all right. Brendan.
Hello.
Hey, there she is. How you doing, Martha?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
Great. We wanted to pick up where we left off a few weeks ago, Martha, because I didn't feel we really gave you enough time to talk about some of the issues that were on your mind. You know, folks, Martha's one of the great artists of the modern era. She's just fantastic and does acrylics as well as oils. But she also has a point of view about the value of art, and I really wanted to bring her back so she could talk a bit about that. Martha, why don't you opine a little bit for us on why you think art is so important, particularly for young people?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, we did talk on this a little bit last week. Art is, I mean, art shapes communities, right? It builds empathy. It allows communities to talk about things that they might not otherwise be able to talk about. It beautifies communities. It brings people together. I mean, art is super important. But also, I think what I started to talk on last week was there's a lot of economic value in art.
Talk about that a bit. That's a great topic. Go ahead.
Yeah, so a recent survey came out that's called Arts and Economic Prosperity, and it showed that with the organizations that took part in this, that there was $1.4 billion in economic activity for San Diego County.
Wow.
And it supported almost 20,000 jobs.
Who would have thought that?
Like, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Right. And then across the U.S., it's over a trillion and supports 4.9 million jobs.
So why is it, Martha, that when we talk of art, that it seems to be in last place in terms of priorities by government
right.
as well as schools? What's the disconnect between what you're offering and what's actually happening? Or do you think the disconnect isn't there anymore?
I think there's definitely a disconnect. I think that it's... Okay, so this is a problem I'm actually working on. I have a real desire for San Diego to up level, be more on par with art in New York and LA. But we have everything we need to do it. And your question would be different if you were talking in those cities, right? Like they see the value of art. San Diego hasn't had a county of arts and commission for like 40 years. They just reestablished this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think. San Diego in particular, this is a hard question, but and also we value our beaches and we're just not giving it the attention that it needs, but it's really powerful. I just saw something on social media where, somebody went out and said, hey, find me geniuses. And then they saw in children that were creative that 98% of children, something like this, don't quote me, 98% of them that they did the genius test on were geniuses. And then you come back 10 years later and it's like 30%. So it's creativity that it does so much. And if you look back at the Renaissance, I mean, that was a big movement, right? That art was everywhere. It was so appreciated and valued amongst the highest minds in the world. And it helped create peace and prosperity.
But it was embraced. Embraced. When you talk about coming out of the Middle Ages and into the Renaissance, it was an expression of self
right.
and individuality. And you certainly have that in the modern era, but it just doesn't seem to be embraced. I mean, when you look at a city the size of San Diego and you say, where's the public art? Where's the great architecture? Why do you think that it's not there?
Oh, my.
Another hour show.
I know.
Take a shot at it.
I think there's several reasons. So some of my friends will say, you know what? A lot of people here just don't care. They just don't care. A lot of people here so there are a lot of international artists and collectors in San Diego, but they don't show here and they don't buy here. So that's a couple things to consider.
So it seems like there's sort of a cultural gap between what we know is the inherent value of artistic endeavors, and especially for young people and what it gives them, versus what's actually happening in this eighth largest city, where there doesn't seem to be a linkage between it. You suffer from that, I think, because some of you want your art to be seen and to be bought, and other artists that you know do as well, right?
Exactly. You're exactly right. I'm working on this new series. I want to go big with it. And where do I want to show?
Yeah. But look at this, Martha. Graffiti. Barrio Logan.
Yeah.
Now, the community has embraced that. But why aren't they embracing other forms of art?
I think it's going to take some work.
Yeah, I do
too. There's a lot of good people in the city working on this. You know, Steve, you wanted me to mention that the kids in arts program.
Please.
One thing I'm working on to try to move this along in San Diego. I'm working with Kamal at Art Power Equity and the Samuel Lawrence Foundation on a new program to work with kids in schools to use art and design thinking to solve some of our, you know, our local challenges, of our local challenges. So like the mess up at San Onofre and the Tijuana River, for example.
Right.
I also think another thing that San Diego needs to up-level our game in the arts is fashion. You know, everybody's running around in flip-flops. Even when we have a fancy event, people aren't dressing nice.
Right.
But anywhere you look that has a strong art and culture scene, people are dressing nice.
So the equivalent of what happens like at the Met events in New York City, where people dress to the nines and have outrageous fashion as art, that doesn't happen here, does it?
Mm-mm.
Right.
Well, wouldn't you say that the art...
People love to get dressed up. People love a fancy party. Let's have more of those.
But Martha, don't you think people that support the art community, the people that sell the paintbrushes, the people that sell the paint, the people that sell the canvases, they need to get involved and contribute and have a once-a-year art show or something to the fact to expose all the young artists, have scholarships in colleges or high schools. And I think it needs to start with the people that have all the money and work backwards.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you.
Well, we'll have to work on that.
I mean, we have something happening here in San Diego called we got designated the World Design Capital. It gets a new designation every couple of years, and it's the first time it's been in a U.S. city. We're sharing the designation with Tijuana.
Wow.
But what have they done?
We beat Moscow for it. Nobody knows about it.
Yeah.
Nobody knows about it.
But what have they done? I mean, is there going to be a monument made? Are we going to put something in place for all time that will represent us? It doesn't have to be public art. I mean, it could be a new gallery.
Yeah.
But they
are doing a lot. They have some competitions. There's some sculptures that will be made. Mm-hmm. There's some cross-border things. So I'm pretty excited about that, but I want more people to know about it.
Yeah.
Get involved.
And I think it's because the messaging is too internal, perhaps, on these artistic endeavors, rather than having larger outreach. Would you think that might be part of it?
Yeah, I think San Diego, I think in order for us to succeed in this endeavor, we need to be more international. One problem San Diego has is we're very, you know, we like our little bubble, you know, let's support local only.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an international gal. Like, we have to look outside of ourselves and bring in an outside perspective to really move the needle here.
All right, Martha, we'll fire up that paintbrush and go.
Thank you, Martha.
Right.
Have some fun in the.
Thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you down the road. It's a great interview. All right, folks, this is No Bull Roadhouse right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer.
Aw, man, the lights are flickering again. Looks like we got to pay us some bills. We'll be right back to the No Bull Roadhouse right after this. Folks, y'all can come back into the No Bull Roadhouse. Here are your hosts, Dave Stahl and Steve Cohen.
You got that right. No Bull Roadhouse, where you'll be telling your friends to tune in. Right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. I can't believe you got Billy on the line, Steve.
I do. I have Billy. Billy Moore, how are you? Billy, of course, runs... Anybody Can, which is a great group that helps young people find their way through boxing in the gym. And Billy, I we met down at your gym. I took a few shots at the bag, went around the ring, and unfortunately, you didn't have the gloves on, so I got out of there in one piece. Billy,
how are you all doing today?
We're doing great. I want you to tell us and tell our audience, what is it that ABC is all about, and how did it come to you from your dad's legacy? Go ahead and talk about it.
Well, what ABC was started in 1957. My dad met with President Eisenhower at the White House, and all of this is documented. And he said that the United States is headed for a gang and a drug epidemic. He said that in 1957. and ABNC was started. It's a prevention program. We teach our youngsters how to step up in life with their best foot forward, without cowardice, but with courage and dignity. And we use boxing as the backdrop. And it, every kid that walks by a boxing gym, they think they can be champion of the world.
Right.
So we get them inside of the gym, but the catch to it is, in order for them to get back to the boxing section of it, we have a makeshift library inside of a boxing gym. And we have tutoring sessions. We have a learning center. We have four tutors that's here 3 days a week, Tuesday through Thursday. And in order to box, you have to have a certain grade point average. And right now, we're the grade point average is a 3.0.
Wow.
And when they know how to defend themselves, it makes them happy to go to school. It makes them happy to sit in the classroom. Because bullying is at an epidemic proportion now.
Billy, let me ask you something. Tell us about who the young people are and what their ages are. My sense is that they come from the local community there, right? And they are kids that don't have a lot of other things going for them, and that's why they come to you and your facility down there. Would that define the child for us a little bit?
We start them out as early as 6 years old. ABNC is a prevention program. We stop the problem before it starts. And what I mean by that, we line them up and we do what's called the ABNC concept that teaches our kids the simple basic do's and don'ts of society. The simple basic things that we don't want to do. Don't refuse to go to church. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't smoke. Don't drink. Don't gamble. The things that we should do. Go to church. Go to school. Go to junior high school. Go to high school. Get a high school diploma. When you get a high school diploma, you got to go where? Go to college. Mm-hmm. And that's what we teach. We have probably 3-4 college graduates. And what we're most proud about is the kids that started out at 6-7 years old. We have a number of them that are married and they have families now.
Wow.
And they are from right here in the hood, where it's not a whole lot to do, but there are things to do. But, you know, we also have a gym in Liberty Station. And the kids out at Liberty Station, they have the same problems. So all of our kids are in trouble across the nation.
And you feel this is because of what? Is it a lack of values that are taught, or family situations that are broken? Give me your analysis. You've been at this for many decades now. What is it that's making these kids underserved in their communities that have a need for what you offer?
A lot of broken homes.
Right.
A lot of broken homes, and the homes that aren't broken, they're struggling with making ends meet. And when you struggle to make ends meet, it causes chaos in the home. And so I thank God that ABNC is able to, we've been able to step in, by the grace of God, able to step in and help make a difference with the families. And it's a different ball game, Steve, in a lot of areas in cities.
And how is it different, Billy? What is it that's changed through the years that you've been involved? It seems to me that the need has become greater, not less. Why is that?
It's greater.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, not able to make ends meet. And that's a big struggle now, making ends meet. And, you know, can I talk plain?
Sure.
Please, that's why we're here.
You know, you have families, man, that the kids, daughters, are going out doing prostitution.
Yeah.
Young teenage girls.
Yeah.
And that's something that's it's permissible in order to make ends meet. And that's kind of that's one of the things gang violence,
right.
gangs or families. That's why a lot of kids join gangs, because they work together to make ends meet. And that's the big problem, Steve. And that's, I can happily say that ABNC has never had an issue, because as a kid, I think it was last year, one of the kids said, well, because they have to, in order to get to the gym, there are three gang territories that a lot of our kids have to walk through to get to ABNC.
Wow.
And,
well, you know, and I've been there, I've visited, and
you did.
And it, you know, I don't know how you define tough neighborhoods. The thing is that people are out there that shouldn't be out there. And if you're a youngster and you're 9 to 15 years old, your inclination is to join up rather than to fight back, right?
Well, they're going
to
prey on you. They're going to grab you and try to capture you. Let me ask you, Billy, because we're talking about men right now. What about women? Because, you know, some of the girls, you know, are getting into trouble as well. Do you have a program for the girls?
No. It's called Anybody Can.
Ah, perfect.
And our best boxer is a girl.
I could have told you that.
talk about her a little bit, Billy. She's a real success story from your organization.
Well, Lizette Corrales, she's a few years ago, she received a full ride scholarship to UC Berkeley Mechanical Engineering.
Whoa.
How about that?
This girl came to ABNC as a ballet dancer. She was 12 years old. And she went on, she won three titles, and then she received that scholarship. She graduated last year, or 2 years ago now, and she's at, what's the name of the college she's at now? Of course, she's at Cornell now receiving her doctorate.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
Billy, is Terrence Sig with you, Billy?
No, he's not here. He's not here.
Okay, because that's your executive director, and I know he's been part of making it work for you as well. So she went on to really not only be a terrific boxer, but she's going on to her career now, has she not?
Yes, she's at Cornell now, going to receive her doctorate. Well, we have another kid. We have Lamar Slater. Lamar Slater graduated with honors here in San Diego and went on to Morehouse College and graduated with honors.
Now, Billy, I want to let Dave tell you a story about how he met your and met your dad.
You're going to love this, but I need to say one thing. Those two kids you just mentioned, where would they be today if they had never attended ABC? Do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah,
it would be like tossing up a handful.
Yeah. It would be an uphill battle. Okay, so I don't know if you're going to remember this, but I used to be the service manager at Frank Toyota. And your dad put a boom in the back of a Toyota pickup truck with a heavy bag. Do you remember that?
That's right. That's right.
That's how I met your dad, because he had some problems with it, and he brought it in, and we could not believe what he was doing, because the kids would run behind it, and they would beat on the bag, right?
Yeah, we would do it. He'd pull up in the neighborhoods, pull up in different schools,
yeah,
and get the kids to come out. And actually, that's one of the things that we're trying to do now, is to get a truck and do the same thing too.
Well, I tell you what. Do you still have pictures of the old truck?
Got it. Quincy Brown, one of our students, he just pulled it out.
All right. Tell you what. I'll have Steve give you my contact information, and I'm doing this on air, so this way you know I'm not BSing you. I'll go to Toyota and see if I can't get them to donate a truck for the program. What do you think? I'm serious, man. I got contacts. I got lots of Toyotas, but I think Toyota, if I get it to the right people and I know the people, I don't see any reason why. Because what they could do, they got trucks in the press fleet. that they're never going to sell. They're either going to go to schools for training, and this would be a great opportunity. So let me see if I can't make that happen.
Dave, that's a great,
great
idea. And Billy, if people want to contribute
and
help out, where do they go to help you out at ABC?
Go to abcyouthfoundation.org.
Perfect.
That's our webpage.
Thank you, Billy.
Billy, thank you for what you're doing. And, you know, I've known the family for years, and I've always been admired from your dad to you to the whole team. Keep up the good work, and we'll have you back on No Bull Roadhouse down the road.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Billy.
All right. All right, let's take a quick break, and we come back a whole lot more right here on No Bull Roadhouse, Evan. FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer.
Aw, man. The lights are flickering again. Looks like we got to pay us some bills. We'll be right back to the No Bull Roadhouse right after this. All right, folks. Y'all can come back into the No Bull Roadhouse. Here are your hosts, Dave Stahl and Steve Cohen.
Hey, folks. Welcome back to No Bull Roadhouse, where an hour needs to be four. FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. Well, I got to tell you, Steve, having Billy on and Tom, what a great show. And Martha, what an amazing show, as usual. But let's talk a little bit. You went to Mar-a-Lago?
Yeah, I've been involved in sort of alternative TV journalism for the last 30 years.
All they have to do is read your book.
Yeah, you know, so you look at 50 years in a newsroom, a eulogy, and it's about what television news used to be, right? Yeah. Before everybody decided
journalism.
Before everybody decided to choose up sides. And so, I guess I have some notoriety for being an alternative journalist. But I was invited by a very good friend who happens to be a longtime friend of former President Trump. And he said, you know what? It's Super Tuesday. You're not working anymore as a journalist. You're out there. Why don't you come on down and visit with me and sit at my table?
Yeah.
At Mar-a-Lago. So, of course, I said yes.
You at Mar-a-Lago?
Yeah. I'd never been there.
I never have.
Never been there. It's beautiful, beautiful place and off of West Palm. You go over a little bridge there. And sure enough, you know, you get all dressed up and I go in and sit at the table at Mar-a-Lago. And the
place is packed.
The place is packed. People dressed to the nines.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a room with more money. I mean, I just tell you.
You could smell it.
Because I don't have any.
Yeah, well, neither do I, but so, I bet you could smell it.
So I'm impressed by it. But all those folks are in the room. It's not a fundraiser. This is for President Trump's Super Tuesday victory. That's why everybody is there.
Sure.
So we're all in there, and in the center of this beautiful, like I call it a crystal palace. It just looked like a palace.
Yeah.
There's a little table cordoned off for Mr. Trump, Lara, and Eric, and it's there. And so we're sitting at the table, and I'm talking to really swell folks. Israel, advisor to Netanyahu, Israeli consulate, all these people. So I'm just blessed. And Trump comes into the room, and it's like Super Bowl Sunday. I mean, you just couldn't believe what happened. He walks into the room and casually walking over the table, no music or anything. Everyone stands up, and then they start screaming. I mean, not like polite. But like
screaming,
like he is the greatest individual in the world to them, which I think he is.
I do
and
too.
He goes over to the table. He sits down for like a minute and a half. That's it. Just long enough to sit. He gets back up and he starts working some tables. So I'm watching the president walk around. And he obviously knows all these people.
Yeah,
these are all these are big investors. Yeah. $50,000 a plate.
Oh,
people.
Yeah. Oh,
all right,
yeah.
$50,000 a plate.
Yeah.
I didn't pay for mine, okay, so I'm trying to be real quiet.
I couldn't afford a napkin.
I'm trying to be real quiet, but sure enough, he comes over to greet my friend, and my friend introduces me. I never met former president before to former President Trump, and we have a wonderful conversation.
What did he say to you? Can you tell me?
Because we have a mutual friend. Bill O'Reilly is a lifelong friend
right.
of mine. Bill was my weekend anchor for me in 1978, if you can believe it. That's how long Bill and I
That's when he started.
Yeah, and we've been buddies all that time. And of course, the president knows Bill very well. So we used Bill as a jumping off point.
And, sure.
He asked me about you know, why I've held this alternate point of view. And I told him that I just think that that truth is important, and we've got to live with that. And he was very kind, and it was, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. It wasn't a big deal. You met a few other people at the table, and then he left. And then after that experience, of course, because it knocks you out. I mean, I don't care who you are politically. When you get to meet a president of the United States, it's a big deal. I've been blessed. I had a chance to meet with Gerald Ford in the mid-70s.
Okay.
William Jefferson Clinton is somebody I really did know before he was president, and then as president.
And you said he was really a good guy.
Yeah, and then Ronald Reagan as well. Yeah. So I've been blessed to have had in my career to be able to rub shoulders with these folks.
Right.
Not a friend of any of them. I think I was probably closer to William Jefferson Clinton than any of them. But just to, you know, just to rub shoulders and to see a man. And of course, as Trump is said to be all the time when he's not on television, he was gracious and kind and thoughtful and all the things you want somebody to be. And he made you feel like you were the only person he was talking to in the room. That's all those guys that I just named, they all had that quality. They made you feel as though you were it for them that night. And of course, it's a ruse. You know that that's not the case, but they're so good at it. And that's why people will vote for them. That's why people want them, because they see that in them. So then I go downstairs as the returns are coming in on March 5. And, of course, President Trump had a very big night on Super Tuesday.
Yeah, he
basically took out Governor Haley.
Uh-huh.
And again, it was like Super Bowl Sunday. The room just absolutely exploded. He gave a few remarks, you know, sort of standard remarks.
Sure.
But the room really just didn't want to shut up. They would not let him
go.
Cease. And that was exciting. And then afterwards, I was very fortunate to spend a little time with Lara Trump, because she was about to take over, as she now is, the RNC.
Right.
You know, and as a journalist, of course, I had questions for her where the money was going to go and what was she going to do. And she said, you know, we had to lend him money for legal fees. We had $59 million in legal fees.
Yeah.
And that was before the judgment of the $454 million.
Sure.
So here I am asking my good buddy here, Dave, you know, what do you think about this? $454 million.
Ridiculous.
For supposedly evaluating his real estate, and they consider that to be fraudulent, Judge Aragon.
Yeah.
And now they're fining him $454 million and $100,000 a day interest on top of that.
Nobody was hurt. The banks want to do business with him. I mean, the banks turned around and said, excuse me? No, we didn't have a problem. In fact, we made money with Trump.
That's right. I think of course, the rule of law is that you don't actually need to have a victim for this, for fraud. But the truth is that in other cases, they have had a victim. And most importantly, I did some research on this.
Uh-huh.
Which is how many cases that have been found to be fraudulent in the New York court system actually went about getting assets. The answer is
bingo.
Zero.
Zero.
So here you have a dispensing of justice, which seems to be out of line with what has happened to other people. And he doesn't have the 454. So now, again, some more research here. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, of all people, in 2019, wrote the majority opinion, which was 9-0, which said, Eighth Amendment, that excessive fines against people are unconstitutional. Excessive fines against people are unconstitutional. Yeah. It was a case called the Tibbs case. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the majority, and she said, it's a violation of the Eighth Amendment. It's also a violation of due process of the 14th Amendment. So I think Trump's lawyers are going to use that as their main
vehicle for
appeal.
But the left doesn't care. They break rules. They don't care. It's like it's their play yard, and they don't. If you got a rule or a law, we're not going to pay any attention to it. This is just my gut feeling. I think Elon is going to write him a check, and he could do it.
Elon Musk could do it, although I think they had somewhat of a brawl going on. And you know that Trump...
Yeah, but Elon believes in honesty and truth.
Seems to.
And you got to give him credit for that. Did you see the interview he did with Don Lemon?
I did.
That was amazing. You know, Lemon's trying to throw him under the bus and tell him he's not into it. And that's one thing about Elon. He doesn't care.
Well, you know, you can be rich and not righteous.
Right.
And you can be rich and righteous.
That's right.
So I think he's rich and righteous.
I think so, too.
And I think that's to everybody's benefit. As you know, Donald Trump is about to, on Monday, have True Social Republic.
$3 billion.
And that's about $3 billion. But the thing is, the court is not going to wait for him to be able to realize that, because he has a six-month lock on being able to deal with that dollar. So his attorneys are saying, look, we don't have the 454.
Right.
Now, just to be clear, because people have gotten this wrong, this is not criminal.
No.
This is not a criminal case. This is a civil case.
Yeah.
This is a fraud judgment based on one judge. There were no jurors there. Yep. The judge was the only one that did.
Yeah.
So you got to be clear. Trump's not going to jail. He's got this fine. They could take some of his
properties,
but they're not going to padlock him. That's not what's going to happen. Yeah. They have to figure out how they would transfer this.
And do you think businesses are going to say, "Oh, geez, I think I'm going to start going to New York and start building and start"?
No, I think the impact of all of this, what we were calling lawfare in our first segment, is that it's eroding our respect for the judiciary. It's eroding our respect for states like New York, California, and others and Washington, D.C., that are using the law in order to take a political purpose and take somebody out. Now, look, nobody that you're going to bump into on the street in this roadhouse is going to think that's a good idea.
Not in the least.
They're just not going to think that. You can't look at our judiciary that way. And get away with it. You know? So,
Putin could do it. Putin could eliminate all of his competition. But you can't do that in the United States. And I don't know why. I don't know how you feel, but my gut tells me he's going to get through this.
I do think that.
I don't know why.
Well, I think there is a why. The why is that there's something about America that has always been the case, and you know this, that somehow, no matter how dire it looks, no matter how bad it seems, the American people do seem to get it right.
Yeah.
That's why we're still around coming to year 250 in 2026. There's something about the American spirit that says we know what's right and we're going to figure out how to get there. Now, politicians have been in the way before and they get in their own way.
Right.
But ultimately, we believe in the inalienable rights and the First Amendment and the rights under our Constitution. And that's just who we are, my friend. And
well,
you know that for sure.
Without a doubt. And look what we're doing to the future generations.
And now finally to Toby Keith, as we always say, let's raise our glasses to fight evil forces. Whiskey for you and me and...
A beer for my horses.
A beer for the horses. Thank you all.
Thank you, folks. That's Red Bull, No Bull Roadhouse. Make sure you tune in. And the next show right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer.
All right, it's time to close up shop for now. But join us again when you re-enter the No Bull Roadhouse. See you next time.